This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? I hope everybody out there is enjoying the holiday season, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to release a really special episode. This is an interview with my good friend Craig Grassi and his dog, Fred the Afghan. Now, Craig is the author of a book called Craig and Fred, and it talks about the story of how Craig met Fred the Afghan. And Fred is a little white dog. He's little, but he's long. He kind of looks like a short version of a golden retriever, if that makes sense. You got to see a picture of him in order to see it. Just really cute. Craig was a U.S. Marine serving in one of the most dangerous areas of Afghanistan. And amidst this combat zone, one day he saw this floppy white little dog. And so he went out and he greeted him, and he saw that he was all covered with bugs and ticks and all kinds of different things. So what he did was he took the dog back into the compound, which was actually way against the rules for a U.S. Marine serving abroad. And him and one of the corpsmen removed all the ticks from Fred's body. And then Fred started hanging around, and the whole unit started loving him and protecting him and caring for him. And during that time period, they grew really attached. And you've got to read the book. It's one of my favorite books that I've ever read. Craig and Fred, really, really amazing story. At any rate, since the book got released, Craig, Fred, and Nora, who's Craig's partner, they've been traveling around the country and just kind of spreading this story of positivity. And I love them. I got a chance to go and meet them all in person in Pasadena this past summer. And the story is really affecting a lot of people in a positive way. And I wanted to take this opportunity to spread some positive holiday cheer for all of you during this holiday season. Before we get started, I just want to say that the Warrior Soul Podcast could not be possible without our good friends at F-Bomb Nutrition. Really great people who have a really great product. Now, products, they make awesome macadamia nut butters, but they also make amazing cheese crisps. Really, really awesome low-carb snack that you can take with you. All of their products are absolutely delicious, and you can get 20% off of your first order when you go to www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul at checkout. And that's it as far as everything goes, guys. Those of you who've been to the podcast before, you know what we do here. We're all about helping the U.S. military veteran community to live their best lives, and anybody else who's willing to listen. If you get helped by one of these episodes, please do us a favor and share them out to people who can use them, and go over to iTunes and write us a written review. Really helps us spread the word about the show and about this mission. With that, let's get into this conversation with Craig Grassi and Fred the Afghan. What is going on, Craig? How you doing, man?
Hey, Chris. How are you, man?
I'm doing awesome. I see you're there in New York City. You got Fred staring out the window out there, man.
We do that all day. This guy, he loves his windows. He loves people watching. It's pretty funny. He loves coming to New York too. After a couple of days, he's like, "All right, like I want to be off the leash. So let me take me somewhere. Take me home. Take me what you need. I want to chase squirrels and stuff." But it's pretty cool. He definitely gets an extra kind of little like kind of chip in his step or chip on his shoulder when we walk around here, because he just loves looking at everyone and smell. There's, you can't go 2 feet without smelling something, even if it's pretty gross.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of gross stuff on the street out there. For those of you who might not have listened to the first episode we did with Craig and Fred, you should listen to that. This is Craig and Fred are two of the few guests we've had on for a second time. And it's because we absolutely love their story and because it's the holiday season right now and we really want to spread some cheer. And if there's one thing that both these guys are good at, it's spreading some cheer. But for those who are going to go back to listen to that first episode, can you tell us a little bit about your story, like the helicopter version of it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I found Fred in late summer 2010 in Helmand in an area called Sangin. I was
in Afghanistan, right?
In Afghanistan. I was an intel guy. I was a head guy attached to First Recon, Charlie Company, and we ripped in and inserted out of 53s out of the helicopters and just kind of occupied a little house. And that first week, we were really, we really kind of just stood our ground and held our position as best we could because the Taliban threw everything they had at us. In the middle of all that, we spotted this dog, and he was just so different from everything around him. We all instantly kind of fell in love with him. Over the course of about 30 days there, we all, just started to, realize that he was special and he was different. And that he kind of, embodied a lot of what we felt like we were over there for, just the fact that he could be a dog and he could be who he was. And that was unique was kind of, unfortunately kind of a problem, we wanted to protect it. We wanted to kind of, make sure that he got the life that he deserved. And, I left it up. It was a big risk, so I left it up to him and I said, if you follow me to the helicopter, you're not scared off by the noise and the dust and all the craziness that is a combat extract, and you come, come with us, I'll see what I can do. I'll try to get you the rest of the way home. And sure enough, we started running towards the bird and he's right at my heel and I had a kit bag, a duffel bag in my pocket. And I pulled it out and Master Sergeant, me and Top Schmidt stuffed him in there and ran him up the back of the bird. And the rest of his journey home, I always say, is a great story, but it's a really important story because it really shows how people can come together from different parts of the world, different cultures, different backgrounds, around a common good, around a really good, representation of something. And in this case, it's a dog, and because Fred getting home was no accident. It could have gone wrong 100 different ways at any time. And the fact that we were able to pull it off, I think is just, it's proof to me that we're supposed to be here. We're supposed to share this story and do it in as many ways and places as we can. So that's what we love to do. We love doing it with our book and we love doing it and speaking events and on awesome shows like yours, Chris.
Yeah. The book, Craig and Fred, I read it last year. It was one of the best books I read last year. And I'm not blowing smoke here. The story, literally there are parts of the story that brought tears to my eyes. I almost cheered at certain parts of the story, like yelled out loud. And my girlfriend, she felt the same way when she read the book. And so that is definitely a book that I recommend everybody read. But I got the chance to go out to see Craig and Fred over in Pasadena this past summer. And there was a crowd there, man. You guys draw an absolute crowd. What's that been like for you?
It's been, I can't look around, especially in Pasadena. And before that, we were in Colorado outside of Denver. And that room in Pasadena, like we stay outside because Fred likes to walk in to a room full of people. It's like, it's funny. I just noticed the difference when we're sitting there in the room kind of, and people start coming in versus when we hang around outside and then walk in. It's like because he walks in a room and he's just like, oh, everyone's here for me. And he gets this whole stage presence. That's really funny. But honestly, man, it's overwhelming. To go all the way across the country to a community of Pasadena, which is beautiful, but I've never been there. I don't know anybody there, and see us fill a big room in a public library like that. I couldn't think about it too much then, but I've been thinking about it a lot ever since. And it's just, to me, it's just, more proof that we're on the right track, and it's, we're doing what we're supposed to do with this story. And what I love about that is that people are taking away something from our story that they need, that I didn't necessarily anticipate. You know, like I thought people would just like to read a good story about a cool dog, you know, and about Afghanistan, and learn a little bit about our veterans and our military. But people are coming up to me and telling me, this is a book about mental health. This is a book about overcoming adversity. This is a book about love, you know, like all these things. I'm like, I didn't sit down and write an outline, like, let's write a book about love or, you know, mental health. Like that wasn't my goal. So I think, you know, it's another thing for us veterans to see the success that we've had with our story. And I hope that the rest of us can see the power of just sharing your story and the significance of just sharing your story. You don't have to write a book or anything, but just share it with your family and friends in as much or as little as you want. But it's powerful. It's powerful, and it'll do a lot for you, and it'll do a lot for the people that hear it. You never know.
Yeah. You know, just knowing a little bit about the story and a little bit about history. I mean, throughout history, warriors have come back and they've been able to tell their story. They told it around a campfire. They told it, you know, at different gatherings. They were able to kind of get that stuff out after their experience. And knowing a little bit about you, and, you know, you came back, went to school, went to Georgetown, we're going through that. I also know you suffered a TBI during your service, and you know, I think Fred got home before you did, and you actually suffered a TBI after he'd gotten sent back, right?
Well, yeah, it was actually I brought him back to Leatherneck, and then we had to rip right back to Sangin. So I left him with some guys that worked for DHL, went back to Sangin and was there for like a week or so. And then I got hit with the rocket, and they had to bring me out. So that actually ended up, once I got out of the TBI clinic and my head stopped ringing, I was able to get Fred and get him the rest of the way home. So that ended up being a blessing catching that rocket.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of veterans who suffer from a TBI, they're going through hell. I mean, there's a lot of symptoms from the TBI that lead to depression, that lead to exacerbation of post-traumatic stress, and kind of seeing you work through that and work through that alongside Fred, I think that's absolutely amazing.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. It's been a journey, like, you know, with a lot of ups and downs, just like all of them, but and it still is, but I think the thing that I've realized through it all up to this point is that, you know, ultimately, and it gets thrown around a lot, but it's okay to not be okay. Mm-hmm. And that's, you could say that to someone all day long, but you really need to think about that. And as Marines and as veterans, as military folks, like that's a hard thing for us to really grasp, because we don't like showing our weaknesses. We don't like feeling vulnerable. But that's a part of being a person. And we had to shed that when we joined. We kind of had to minimize that. But it's totally normal. And when you get out, that should be kind of a part of your mental kind of preparation, you know, is to kind of just begin to open yourself up a little bit more, you know, regardless of your experience or your injuries or whatever. Like just think about, you know, your day-to-day interactions with people, and, you know, you don't need to be as on guard. You don't need to be as protective of your weaknesses. You can open up, you know, and that's one of the biggest ways that Fred has kind of shown me that, is because walking him around DC, when I first got out, I worked for the government, and I was trying to do the government thing. And I hated it, and it was killing me. And that's probably when some of my symptoms were at their worst, when I was really frustrated, you know, just with the bureaucracy and the emails and all that crap. And when I'd come home from work, and Fred and I would hit the streets, we'd go for a long run or a long walk to a dog park or something. And at first people would ask, you know, they're always asking me, what kind of dog is that? Cause he's so handsome. and at first I'd be like, oh, you know, he's just a mutt. He's a, you know, I'd make up a breed. He's a pocket wolf or, you know, an Afghan foxhound or, you know, whatever. And people would come like, oh yeah, I've heard of those, you know. And, but little by little, I started to like be like, you know what, this is a cool story. I'm gonna tell this random person at the dog park about Fred and where they came from, you know. And the more I started to open up to, in most part, total strangers at the dog park or around bars or wherever we were, the more I realized that I enjoyed telling the story, and that it also kind of it justified a lot of the really seemingly almost kind of pointless things about the war, that, you know, you really, a lot of us have a hard time when we come home with the fact that, you know, what was all that for, you know, like, what was the point of all that, you know? And that's a tough thing to deal with, especially when you've lost friends. And I think if you're standing on US soil and you have the ability to share the story of your experience, then that's all you need. That's what it was for. You went through it, so you could tell, and you survived it, so you could tell the tale. And it doesn't need to be any bigger than that, you know. And that's what Fred has shown me through our story, you know, just that little bit of sharing can go a long way. And it made my experiences, my TBI, my, you know, all the stuff that we went through when I lost my friend Justin and when we lost Sean, you know, it made it more real. I think I was good about kind of putting it in the back seat. Like, the more time goes by, the better I'll feel, you know, and that just wasn't the case. It doesn't work that way. It's not like a, you know, it's not like a bad date, you know, that you just forget about eventually, you know. It's mm-hmm. like, it's more, it sticks to your head a lot more than that. And the more time you push it down, the more it's going to come back. And the more it comes back, the uglier it's going to get. So it's, I think, you know, I'll never claim to be an authority on dealing with trauma or anything like that, but this is what's worked for me. And to be able to go to Pasadena and to be able to go all over the country and fill rooms and hear from people, from veterans, from different eras too, from the Vietnam era. A lot of Vietnam veterans are coming up to me at these events too. And like, man, like, thank you. You know, like, thank you for your honesty and thank you for your story. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you're in the jungles, you know, like, this is, I don't want to hear that from you. Like, you're a stud, you know, like, this is insane. I could have never anticipated that those guys would take away anything from our story.
Yeah, that's got to be so deep to hear from guys like that. You guys are getting a lot of letters, right? Like from all over the place.
There's and one of the biggest, most recent things was this town in Wisconsin called Hillsboro. It's a little dairy town in Wisconsin, really beautiful part of the state. And we booked a speaking event there at two schools and the VA hospital. And we got on the phone with the lady, Jackie, who was organizing it. She's like, I want you to know, like, the whole town has read your book. Like, this has been our community read for the last year. And I was like, okay, like, that's nice. You know, maybe her book club read the book and a couple of their families, you know. But I get there and our poster is plastered all over the little town, you know, the book cover, you know, and there's like, they had like a countdown to when we were coming. And we get there, they had this beautiful brewery right downtown. They make their own food there and like their own beer. They had a big lunch and come to find out in the days prior to our arrival, they had all their community's veterans from regardless of the era coming to their schools, to their elementary schools and their high schools. And they were eating lunch with the kids and hanging out with the kids in the days leading up to our visit and engaging, you know, and like having the kids ask them questions about their service. And so we get there and it's like, all this has already taken place. And they have a big, after my first school, we went to lunch at this brewery and they had a big, you know, lunch for all the town's veterans. And I was like blown away that our story, this little dog, you know, had become like the catalyst for all of this engagement, because people were coming up to me like, I've never told even my wife some of the stuff that I told these kids at the school. you know, and like, and Jackie, the organizer, was like, I grew up, that's my mailman. Like, that's my neighbor. I'd known them my whole life. I didn't even know they were in Vietnam.
Wow.
You know, you know, now I walk into school, you know, one of the classrooms, and he's talking to the kids about, you know, patrolling through the jungle, you know, and all that, and what the, you know, what that was like. And like, that's insane. That's insane. And that particular visit was an example of a really exceptional town, and especially and it's an exceptional person. This lady, Jackie, is unreal. She did so much work. And it all started actually with her brother, Tony, who's a 2-9 guy, a grunt from 2-9 who was in Sang in Marja around the same time as me, but he read the book and passed it off to his sister. And so that's one of the best examples, you know, besides going all the way to the West Coast and to Pasadena and seeing a room full of people and then going to this little town, you know, that really, you know, it's a community kind of thing. And I think that's what was missing for a long time. Especially during the Vietnam era, was when those guys came home, like they didn't want to tell anybody about what they, because they didn't want to get spit on. They didn't know how people would react, you know? And I think the fact that our book can bring a little bit of peace of mind, a little bit of peace to some of those guys and their experiences, like that's very humbling.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, you mentioned that idea of a small town and an exceptional town. You know, one of the things I think, because you and I come from similar geographic areas, we're from the East Coast. We were raised around kind of urban-ish areas. And I think that when East Coast people get to travel around the rest of the country, and yeah, see what the way people do things and in other places, it's like, and not to say anything bad about the East Coast, cause I love where I come from, but right, it's just the sense of community is so different when you go across the country and you get to travel and you get to speak to people and you see the things that are so important to them and that bond them together, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's like, I love coming to New York, cause it's like, I feel like a total outsider in the best way. I feel like I'm watching a show. Like when you walk around here, it's nuts. Like people, it's a really interesting way to live. And I didn't used to see it that way. Cause I lived in DC for a long time, you know, and it's kind of a similar kind of vibe where people have like a little bubble around them and it's not like, no one's really concerned about each other's welfare. And that's what I love about, just a side note, like that's what I love about walking around New York with Fred, because Fred breaks that bubble down immediately. Like I was just telling you before the show, I walked him across the street and there's this traffic cop like yelling at people and like smacking cabs on the roof, you know, trying to get him through this intersection. And Fred comes prancing through the intersection and just is like looking at her, you know, with his big eyes, and she's just like melts instantly. He's like, "Hey, sweetie, good morning," you know, like talking to him, and he's like talking back, and it's so funny about how quickly those walls can come down. But when you go to a town like Hillsboro, or when you go to a different community that's not, you know, just so overpopulated like so many of our cities on the East Coast, you get this really, you know, good sense of community. And what I like about it, and what I love about where we live in Maine, and just Maine as a state, is accountability. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the people in Maine, if they say they're going to do, and it's not just Maine, but that's what was really drawn us there. But people in these communities like that, if they say they're going to do something, if they say they're going to, you know, meet you for coffee or shoot you an email or, you know, or anything like that, you better believe that's going to happen. You know, and I think, especially in DC, I lived there for a long time. And the thing that kind of drove me away the most was the insincereness. Like just people would tell you whatever they thought you wanted to hear. And veterans get a lot of lip service there. You know, you go to like a job function or, you know, all the contractors have booths, you know, and you go and talk to, you know, different people who say they're hiring, and you get 1,000 business cards and maybe one follow-up, you know, right. And, you know, "I got you, devil dog. Okay. You're an intel guy. You know, I'll take care of you. I'll get you, you know, this and that." And it's just, it doesn't go anywhere. At least that was my experience. And when the first time going up to Maine and doing a show in Maine and somebody saying, oh, I'm going to shoot you an email because we have a hockey club that meets every week, you know, and like within an hour, that's what happened. You know, it was just really, really cool to see.
Yeah, that's one other thing I noticed about DC too when I was there, because I did some internships and some jobs down there for a while. Every time you go out and you start a conversation, it's what do you do? Who do you work for? What can you do for me? And that just again, DC people, I'm not talking crap about you. I'm just saying that sometimes for outsiders going there, it seems like you are overly concerned with what occupation the person you're talking to does.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and I think the only reason I was able to live there as long as I did is I found the one street, the one neighborhood that kind of wasn't like that. It's becoming more like that now. It's this area where I read about it in my book, the Pug. Mm-hmm. My favorite bar is called the Pug. If you walk in there talking about, you know, what senator you work for, what agency you work for, like, they're gonna laugh you out of the place. No one
cares. that's around Georgetown, right?
No, that's for other side of town.
Okay.
Northeast side of town. It was a bad neighborhood for a long time, unfortunately, but it's coming around. And Georgetown has some decent pockets too, but I think the thing with DC and a lot of big cities is people kind of move there for a purpose.
Right.
They move there for work. They don't move there. Like, you don't move to New York because the real estate is so great. You know,
right.
Like, you're going to get this sweet, huge apartment. Like, you move there because you want to pay your dues. You want to work a job. So people, even when they're off, even when they're, you know, interacting socially, they can't flip that switch and turn their work brains off. And I think that's really important, you know, and that's what a lot of the different towns and, you know, in different parts of the country that are more rural, you know, that's what they have going for them. Cause you don't want to walk in a restaurant and meet a friend for work and just talk about work all day. You know, like, you want to talk about, you know, what you guys are going to do that weekend, or, you know, how their family is, you know, and it's just a lot more to talk about.
That's awesome. Now, are you working on another book right now? Or are you thinking about getting one out there?
Yeah, actually, that's one of the, we came to New York for a gala. Actually, we're the hotel we're staying in is right next to the Animal Medical Center. It's this big hospital. Mm-hmm. It's been around for like 120 years. It's an amazing organization in New York. And they honored Fred as their top dog for the year at this big gala. It was pretty amazing. But while we're here, we decided to meet with my agent and this lady named Kelly, who I collaborate with, and we kind of, you know, flush ideas out with, and she helped me a lot with Craig and Fred. And the next book is kind of the priority right now. I want to get going on that. And I'm excited about it because it has a lot to do with the meaningful connections that you make when you live in a community. And it's just happened to be me, for me. And I've been going up and spending time, in the Maine State Prison, mm-hmm. Which is Shawshank, it stood as Shawshank for from 1880 something to 2000. It was one of the oldest operating prisons until 2000. Now it's a modern facility, and the warden, is an incredible guy. He's an army veteran, Battle of Fallujah. And he took over, I think, a year or two ago as the warden, and he realized that there are a lot of veterans in the prison. And so he's created a lot of really awesome programs, but one of them is this, he created a cell block, a whole pod, they call them pods, but he created a pod that's just for veterans, just for people who served. And if they're on good enough behavior, they can get into this pod. And when you walk in there, I worked in prisons my first 4 years. I worked in the brig my first 4 years in down in Guantanamo Bay and in Charleston, South Carolina. And when you walk in this pod for veterans, it's like, it's almost like a, I don't know, it just feels more like a community center. It kind of has like this whole different vibe that you wouldn't expect in a state penitentiary. And there's murals on the wall of all the different branches, and there's plants, and there's dogs. There's dogs running around. Because that's one of the other things that they do is right now, I think they have about 4 dogs from America's Vet Dogs. And they have them for the first 18 months of their lives.
and they're training them to be service dogs. And then they hand them off and they get their specialty training for whatever disability they're going to be for. And I've been going up there, and just first it was just because they read the book and they wanted me to come and say hi and bring Fred. But there's something there, you know, their stories are really interesting and sad in a lot of ways, but I want to share more about what these guys are doing, you know, because they don't have to do that. You know, they don't have to try and get in this veterans pod. They don't have to, they don't really get anything out of working with these dogs other than they get to work with the dog, but it's a lot of work. It's not like they just play with a puppy all day. Like, they have to train them, and it's, you know, it takes a lot of patience and discipline to do that. You know, and I think it's a connection to serving again, you know, that they had when they were in the military, you know, and they, despite, you know, the things that led them into prison, they want to give back in some way, you know, so that's kind of what I'm excited about working on, is exploring those stories.
Well, I think the thing is, you know, a lot of us think that if we had tons of free time, we'd be okay, right? That if we had a lot of different types of free time, we'd be able to do what we wanted and everything like that. The problem is that our brains don't really work like that. You know, we're meant to be part of a community. We're meant to serve. We're meant to contribute to a group. And if we're not doing that, the best analogy I've ever heard is actually a dog analogy. And that's with an Australian Shepherd, right? Australian Shepherds are amazing dogs. They're beautiful. They're extremely smart. But if you don't give them anything to do, if you don't satisfy that natural herding instinct, the dog goes crazy and it starts ripping up the house and it starts digging holes. And that's what humans do too. If we don't have our minds occupied with something, if we're not working on something, then we start digging holes and we can dig ourselves into a hole. Right.
Yeah. That's a great analogy. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I mean, how many people say it all the time? Like, oh, if I didn't have this job, if I didn't work so much, I could get everything done. If I could just have, and then when you get time off, you just like, you just crash, you know, because you can't function without that kind of structure. Yeah, that's really, I like that analogy a lot. I'm gonna keep that in mind.
Yeah,
and for these guys, it's cool to walk in there and really quickly, like, sit down with, you know, five or six of them, and you start hearing stories about their deployments, stories about boot camp, you know, all the classic kind of veteran talk, you know, and in a couple of minutes, you kind of forget that you're in a prison, you know, and it's to me, it's a good illustration of the strength of service, you know, the bond that we all share, you know, because we put that uniform on, we signed on that line, you know, like, we'll always have that commonality regardless of our circumstances, you know. And another thing it really makes me think about is all the times that I could have ended up down that road, you know, and just one bad day really could lead you down that slippery slope, you know, or just makes me, if nothing else, makes me really grateful that I came home to a community that was pretty intact in terms of, like, you know, I came back to Fairfax, Virginia, which is, you know, a very safe, very, you know, easy place to kind of live. And my dad still had the house, so I could kind of be with him and figure out my next move. But a lot of these guys got, you know, they served and then they came home back to their town, and the town was overrun with drugs and crime, and there are no jobs. And, you know, it's, I'm not making excuses for anybody, but when you think about taking somebody who served and was in for, you know, 4 years or more and got used to that environment, and then they come home and they can't find a job, and they have all this energy and all this potential, where are they going to go? What kind of hole are they going to dig for themselves? You know, and it's, you know, it's really kind of heartbreaking to see that. And then, but in terms of personal accountability, I have to really think about myself and that, man, like, that could have very easily been any one of us, and it definitely could have easily been me, in terms of just not dealing with things the right way and the mistakes that I made. If I hadn't had a good, you know, community around me, a good cushion, you know, it could have gone wrong.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys, they end up, you know, their friends are saving them a seat at the bar, right? The same bar stool they would have been on it had they never joined. And, you know, I found myself in that situation, you know, when I got back, I was basically just drinking my life away and partying my life away. And for other people, like, it might not be like that. It might be, you know, they're getting into other bad stuff, but I think it's important you find something to keep you going, something to keep that fire alive, something to keep that mind going, because right. Otherwise it's just going to go to crap and it sucks.
Yeah, it does. So that's, you know, I'm hoping to shed some light and, you know, gain some perspective for everybody, you know, about the opportunities that we have, you know, and if you served, I think one of the things that I struggled with was my confidence. And because I didn't have a lot of veterans around me. When I moved back to DC, I was surrounded by my friends that I know my whole life, and they're fantastic. Like they're my family in a lot of ways, but most of them hadn't served in the military. And back then, none of them had served. And so it was like kind of easy for me to kind of forget, you know, what I was capable of. And I think if you forget that, if you forget, you know, just even if you just went through Paris Island or went through boot camp, but you did some crazy stuff. Like you were up all night and you were, you know, like you pushed yourself and you accomplished a lot in a short amount of time. And if we can remind ourselves, you know, of those times, of those hard times when we did great things, then we can find that energy and that confidence in the civilian world. And we could bring that into the civilian world and into our professional and personal lives, you know, and it just takes a little bit to kind of remind ourselves of that. And if nothing else, it's just talking to another veteran or even I'm reading a book, Nate Fick's book right now, One Bullet Away, which is a fantastic book. About, you know, he was a first recon officer and led the charge into Iraq in 03. But it's like giving me a whole new like burst of energy, you know, just reading about, you know, his experiences through training and you know, becoming an officer and all that. I'm like, man, like, okay, yeah, like I did some of that stuff. Like I can, you know, so how hard is it for me to get up a little earlier and go for a run, you know, or how hard, like what's stopping me from, you know, from writing another book or from exploring, you know, other options, you know, or other avenues. Like what's my excuse? You know, like back in the day, I'd have done 6 miles before breakfast, you know, like this is, you know, I can get up and answer some emails, you know, like it's just a reminder, you know, of what we're capable of.
Absolutely. I think, you know, and that's something I have to do. I have to constantly try to do that. I have to constantly try to push myself physically. I have to constantly try to find something that's going to push myself mentally, whether it's a new project, just back to that analogy again, if it's not focused, if that energy isn't focused, you end up running all over the place, trying to figure it out. And I think what's cool about you is that you found something to really focus on here, you know, I was asking myself this question before we got on, you know, what would lead somebody to write a book, right? What would lead, because a book is a torturous process, right? Like you've got to sit down, you got to sort through your thoughts. You got to type it all out. When it comes out, it's probably the first draft might be a mess. You got to go back, and that could take a long time. What was really driving you at that point? When did you say, all right, I am going to do this. This is going to get out there in print, and I'm not going to stop until it's out there.
Yeah. It's, that's a great question. And it is like a kind of a exhausting process. I guess it's one of those things that I think about it sometimes, like running. Like I love to run. And like I went for a run yesterday and I was like, I'll do a quick 3 and I'll come back. And I ended up doing 6 because I went running down the river here in New York. It was like, oh, okay, what's that? I got to see that, you know, and like there's a bridge I saw people walking over this little pedestrian bridge to an island. I was like, oh, that's cool. I got to check that out. You know, and it's like, the more I ran, the more I saw, and the more I realized I wanted to see. And when you start to write, especially about your own experiences, the more, it's a painstaking process, but it's a detailed process, and you lose a lot of the details in your own head when you just try to, through your own memories, without writing them down. But when you write them down, you remember how cold it was that day, you know, what you did the day before something happened, who was there, who wasn't there. You know, you remember all these details, and the therapy of it, I guess, is in that too, because you see the purpose. You see where things went right and where things went wrong. And that's, you know, a lot of times, especially when something good happens, we're really good about just being like, oh, congrats. You know, like, that's great. You know, and we move on. But if you want to really, you know, do a good thing, justice, or an accomplishment, gut justice, you need to kind of reverse engineer it, you know, and kind of explore, you know, how you got there, you know, because if something bad happens, we're very good about that. We're very good about, you know, who didn't do their job, who went wrong, who's to blame, you know, and we demand kind of this accountability. But I think we're not doing everything justice if we don't explore the same with the same kind of commitment, you know, the good things. And I think with writing, that's what it is. It's kind of expanding our experiences and seeing the significance in them. And it just, you just chip away at it. It's, you know, the more I write, the more I see, you know, that it's bigger than me. And the success of Craig and Fred of my first book, you know, it is because of other people. It's because of people who have read it and have taken away something and have made it bigger than I could have ever imagined, you know? And so I just want to continue to put stuff out there that people can do that with, that people can kind of grab onto and, you know, and use for themselves. That really motivates me.
Right. And that's the thing. I think, you know, a lot of people think that when they're writing a book, it's about them, right? Or when they're doing something, it's about them. I think one of the reasons why you're the perfect steward of this story, I think that's maybe the proper term, this steward of this whole story, is that you're actually a really humble guy, and that you see how big this is in the big picture, as far as how the story can help other people.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I the hardest thing of, you're more humble than me.
No, no, man. We could do that all day, man.
Yeah. No, it's, I love my friends, and I love the people I served with. And I'm so grateful to look around a room and see people that have come into my life. And I want to share them. I want to share, you know, their influence on me, you know? So yeah, it is always hard for me to write about myself, because I don't want anyone to ever think for a second that I'm like, you know, beating my chest, or that I am very, you know, proud of myself. You know, I am in some ways, but it's not, I don't know. It's tricky. I you know, I'm not, you know, I don't see myself as this great Marine. You know, I served with some really great Marines. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I'm just doing, like you said, I'm a steward, you know, and I am just doing my duty by sharing these stories. And I gotta look it up. I gotta look up this speech, but it was by a Civil War veteran. And I was thrown around at a writing clinic I went to in the early days of my writing, by the Veterans Writing Project, which is a great nonprofit, that does writing clinics for vets. But essentially the guy was like, he was shot to bits. He like
missing a bunch of, you know, digits and stuff. And he was like, you know, the essential message of his speech was, it's our duty, you know, all of us, that he was talking to a bunch of other Civil War veterans. And he was like, it's our duty now to tell the tale. Like, if you're still here, if your heart is still beating in your chest, then, you know, tell the stories of those who aren't, you know, and keep them alive through your life. And that was a big motivator for me, with Craig and Fred, and with, you know, continuing to write. And the only way that I was really able to write about myself was, I actually, in my head, I wrote, what I might've looked like, or what I thought I looked like to my friends, to Justin specifically, my friend who was killed. I kind of saw myself through his eyes, you know, and that made it a little easier for me to write about what I did and my part in all of it. You know, because it's also, I think it just has a lot to do with being a Marine and, you know, being told constantly that, you know, your mom was wrong. You're not special, you know, and, right. We're not supposed to really, dwell on any of, you know, those achievements that, you know, that we make. We're supposed to, you know, look to the Iwo Jima statue and be like, those are the guys you're chasing, you know, or Chesty Puller, or, you know, there's always going to be somebody that was, you know, bigger and better and harder than us. And I think that's great. I think that's something that kind of carries over into the civilian world. But, I was thinking about this analogy about that helps, kind of break down how I felt when I got out. It's like when you, if you're a sports person, like if you play, anytime you play, I'm a hockey player, and anytime my team, we're really, you know, good team, everybody does their job well, we're sharp and ready to rock, like an A level team. When you go out and you play a B level team, sometimes what happens is you end up playing down to that level. You end up playing slower and moving the puck slower and not talking. And you end up kind of getting sucked into this crappier version of what you were supposed to be. And I think that can happen. That can happen to veterans. I think that can happen to us when we get out and we're not surrounded, all of a sudden we're not surrounded by people on our left and right who are demanding the best of us every day. We're kind of, you know, we're surrounded by people who you kind of just get by, you know, and they're okay with that. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's not us. Right. You know, that's not what we should be about. We should be about achieving, you know, the maximum amount of potential. If that's what you believe in. And I think that definitely happened to me. I definitely kind of at one point was just looking, I just want to get a job that, you know, I get a pay bump every year and I can get by, you know, and like that's, I kind of fell into that for a second. But I was really unhappy. And I think deep down, I was like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't you. You want more. You want more. Like, you need to be striving for more. You're here for a reason. You need to find it. You know, and I think there's nothing against anybody that is just, you know, wants a good, steady job. Like, that's not, I hope nobody thinks that that's what I'm, you know, saying. You shouldn't, you know, settle, you know, for that. But you should always find something that makes you a little uncomfortable, even if it's just in your personal life, like, you know, writing or exploring art or exploring a new story or a new book or making a new connection with somebody. Like it, there's just something that's in us that won't be satisfied unless we're pushing ourselves in some way, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Right. I think that's so important. And no matter what you're doing, you know, this is the other thing. It could happen even if you have like a full-time career. There could be something that you're doing with your life that's pushing you a little bit more, right? There could be something that you're doing with your life that is going to make you think outside of the box, and that's going to push your comfort zone a little bit. Because we have comfort zones all around us. We have comfort zones of what we're doing in our professional lives. But we have comfort zones in our personal lives, how much we're going to trust somebody. Are we going to let somebody in? Are we going to work on our relationship, right? Because there's a lot of trust involved in having a relationship. There's a lot of trust involved in letting somebody into your personal life and not, you know, in treating them well and all of these different things. So I think we all got to figure out how we're going to push our own boundaries as to, you know, becoming better and stronger people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And relationships, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to what we were talking about before about, and it's like, we're kind of contradicting ourselves in some ways. Cause we're like, oh, remember who you were in the Marines or the military. Remember, you know, all the things that made you achieve and strive, and but also like chill a little bit and relax and let people in. And so I guess there is a balance, and there is this, what do you keep and what do you kind of let go of, you know, in terms, and I think with relationships, it's a different approach. Mm-hmm. You don't need to treat everybody like, you know, like they're plotting against you or that, or like they're one of your troops, you know, or that, you know, they're one of your coworkers. Like you can let people in, you can share, you know, your feelings, you can share your fears and, you know, your vulnerabilities, and that will make you stronger and that will make your relationship stronger. You know, and I think, yeah, that's the part that needs to come down a little bit, but if anything, the accountability and the energy and the idea of challenging yourself and being uncomfortable almost needs to kind of get dialed up a little bit, because it's really easy to play down to that B team and just right. kind of, I'll just get by. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You guys, where are you guys headed next after New York? Are you going back up to Maine for the holidays, or are you going down?
We haven't had more than 2 weeks off the road, pretty much all year, like 20. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to calculate the mileage. I know, just this summer we did over 30,000 miles. And I only know that cause we got a new truck and I've been seeing the odometer, but, so we're going to head home tomorrow, Friday and just chill for the holidays and maybe do some snowboarding and just kind of be home. And I'm going to start cranking out the next book and really exploring, you know, those stories and those ideas and hopefully have something in the works in the new year. Yeah, it's going to be great.
And you guys have some, I'm looking at your t-shirt right now. There's a big old picture of Fred on there. It looks awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool, man. Yeah. We have a bunch of, we're really excited about, our new store, our new online store on fredtheafghan.com. We have new shirts, in ladies and men's sizes and kids sizes. Some of them are Fred. Some of them are my hairy face next to Fred. And they have a little, Fred is on Instagram. I think one of the things he's best known for is his Fred, we call him Fredisms, his little Fred deep thoughts. Right. And so we have one of those on the back and just about stubborn positivity. And if you want to see it here, there's a wagging tail, his wagging tail on the back.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. And we're working on collars and leashes actually too. We're designing those right now. And it's great because I think a lot of people, they want something that, you know, to kind of remind them of Fred every day. They he's kind of become this figure of resilience and the power of stubborn positivity and just kind of committing, you know, your interactions and your life to that idea. And so, yeah, we're psyched about our new online store, and we're raising money every month. We're going to do a different nonprofit, a different veterans or a different animal rescue charity that, you know, a big portion of the proceeds will go, or the profits will go to that. So that's really exciting.
That's awesome. With this, and a couple more questions here, just because I want to get this out. What do you mean when you say stubborn positivity? Because that's something I hear constantly. Yeah. I see it on your Instagram. I see it. See Fred talking about that all the time.
Right. Yeah. To me, it's, and I love talking about this, especially at schools. I think a lot of people can adapt to it and kind of understand it. It's this idea, and it all kind of started when I started sharing the story, and I started to think about the story of Fred and those first moments that I walked up to him. And when I got close to him, I almost turned around on this, you know, cause I got about 5 or 6 feet from him, and I was like, whoa, like he's covered in bugs, you know, and he's his fur is all matted and dirty, you know? And I was like, oh, you can't just, this dog, he's clearly never been taken care of before. He's clearly never interacted with a person, you know, positively before. Like, you can't just walk up on this guy. But I heard just this little kind of thump, thump, thump coming from him. And I looked up and he was wagging his tail. And for him to do that when he clearly had no reason to, you know, it was a message. It was a message to me in that moment. The message was, hey, like, I'm cool. Like, come check me out. Like, what do you got? You know, and it was a vulnerable thing. It was on his part, you know, it was more vulnerable, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about in terms of just opening yourself up, you know, and leading with your heart. That's a scary thing to do. And especially for a dog that has no reason to, it wasn't what, you know, you would have expected. And so I came a little closer, and, you know, our bond was began, you know, and it's made all that little wag of his tail has made all the difference in his life. And look at him now, he's chilling in New York, you know, we have this awesome life, you know, and he never misses a meal, and, you know, and we're having a lot of fun all the time. And it's when I came home, I think that message meant even more to me, because when I came home and I was working a frustrating job, and I felt like my energy wasn't going anywhere, and I was putting it in the wrong places. I was drinking too much, and I had some toxic relationships. And it every time I thought like I was totally justified in being angry and being negative, I would think about Fred, and I would think about those first moments when he had every reason to be negative and to show his teeth and growl and try to get me to leave him alone. And so I guess what the message is in those moments, it's that when we feel like we have every reason to be angry and negative, those are the most important moments that we have, you know, opportunities to wag our tail. And that's where the stubborn kind of part comes into it. Cause it does take that same kind of, you know, idea of being stubborn, which usually isn't a good thing, but if you can apply that same energy that we put into being stubborn about things into being stubbornly positive, into really committing yourself to being positive and to finding things to be grateful for, even if it's just the fact that you woke up that morning, or that you have a job, or you have, you know, anything around you, you have a hot cup of coffee. Like, you can, if you start your day with gratitude and with positivity, then everything kind of falls into place. And that's kind of the philosophy that, you know, that I really love sharing, you know, this idea of stubborn positivity. And I think that's what people really kind of want a reminder of that, you know, and that's what our shirts and all of our Fred gear and our social media, like, that's what we love doing. We love giving people, you know, an example of how far, you know, stubborn positivity can take you. You know, and that's, if nothing else, that's what we love traveling, you know, for. Like, here's this dog who started his life in this really harsh place, in this really unpredictable and volatile environment. And his life expectancy was in the single digits, you know, in terms of days, probably. And now he's, you know, he's trotting across the country, you know, just seeing all this amazing stuff and going to all these fun places. So if nothing else, he's an example to all of us of, you know, what we're really capable of when we open ourselves up, you know, mentally, and we lead with our hearts, and we choose to wag our tails at the world.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Where can people find all the Fred merch that you've got going on?
Yeah. It's on fredtheafghan.com. That's our website. Yeah. It's, and there's a little shop link down there. And the book is on out in paperback now too. So it's a more foldable, kind of crushable copy of it. You can jam in your bag or wherever you're going. And that's everywhere. The book is everywhere you can get books.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And you got to check out their Instagram as well. One of the coolest Instagrams out there. I think that's Fred the Afghan as well. You get to see Fred come behind Fred as he's going on stage, as he's going into a high school gymnasium filled with kids waiting for him, all kinds of different things.
Yeah. It's cool, man. Yeah. We have a lot of fun out there. And I think one point I was chewing on this morning was, I love just what General Mattis said recently. I don't know if you saw the article. I can't remember where he was talking, but he was talking about the civilian military divide. Mm-hmm. And he kind of almost said something about stubborn positivity in my mind. Like, that's kind of what he was getting at, was stop being a jerk. Like, stop if we as veterans stop acting like everyone owes us something, or like we're better than the rest of the population, then we can truly kind of bring our experiences and get the most out of them. You know, I'm paraphrasing and taking away my own interpretation of what he was really talking about. But I love that guy's just a walking motivation machine. But that particular speech was I think what a lot of us really need to hear. You know, I think in this thank you for your service kind of culture, we get kind of elevated almost a little too much. You know, we feel like, you know, everybody should clap for us everywhere we go, and we should get, you know, half off, you know, mattresses or whatever, you know. And I think, you know, if we remind ourselves that we didn't join for that stuff, we didn't join for that, you know, we joined to serve and not be served, and that we need to find our own way to serve, you know, once we take the uniform off. You know, I think that's, you know, again, kind of paraphrasing and taking my own interpretation of his words, but I really loved that he said that. I think that, you know, that's a true message that we all need to hear.
Absolutely amazing. Craig, you know, number one, I want to wish you safe travels and a Merry Christmas and happy holidays. You know, I think that your story is just so amazing. And I just want to acknowledge you for putting it out there and raising positivity around everywhere you go. And Fred too, over there, he's just chilling over there, sleeping a little bit. But seriously, guys, if you're out there listening to this, definitely check out the book, Craig and Fred, if you haven't already. Definitely learn more about this story, spread it around. I think that this would make the perfect holiday gift for somebody, that book, the Craig and Fred, gear, all that stuff would be absolutely amazing. So with that, guys, Craig, thank you so much for coming on, and everybody out there, thank you for listening. Have a happy holiday and get out there and live your best lives while you can.
Thanks, Chris.